I'm William O'Flaherty, and this is All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com, which is a feature partner site on the Middle Earth Network. Today's show is the fourth and final program about how Lewis viewed women. Did he hate them, or was he just against them, or did he possibly have a relatively balanced view of them considering his environment? Your perspective on this topic is hopefully clearer as a result of listening to this four-part mini-series. In this final program, the focus will be on Lewis's relationship with three women, Ruth Pitter, Dorothy Sayers, and Joy Davidman. Plus, at the very end will be a summary statement, at least, of the entire series by Crystal. If you haven't heard the first three episodes, then be sure to go by EssentialCSLewis.com and consult the archives, or check the show notes for this program to find a direct link. As I've had for the other shows, with me to help tackle this topic are two ladies. The first is Dr. Crystal Hurd, who did a 12-part series on her blog, which is at crystalhurd.com. Welcome back to the show, Crystal.
Thank you, William. Thank you for having me back.
Crystal is an educator from Virginia who specializes in leadership and is obviously a Lewis scholar. I also have Gina D'Alfonso returning for this concluding program to help me with hosting duties. She is the editor of Breakpoint.org and Dickens Blog. She also writes for Breakpoint Radio and has written for other publications as well. In addition to co-hosting today, Gina will also be sharing some of her knowledge about Lewis's relationship with Joy Davidman, and she is also familiar with Dorothy Sayers, one of Lewis's close friends. Welcome back to All About Jack, Gina.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Well, because one of the ladies, the other lady, Ruth Pitter, is not one of your areas you're well-versed in, Gina, let me have you pitch the first question regarding her.
Okay. Ruth Pitter, the poet and friend of Lewis, is somebody that you spent a good deal of time talking about on your blog series, Crystal. You shared an interesting letter from Ruth Pitter to Walter Hooper about Lewis's view on women. So could you first give us a quick overview of who Ruth Pitter was and then tell us about her letter?
First off, let me interest you in one of the great books that I used for this post. It's actually Don King's Hunting the Unicorn, which is a critical biography, the only critical biography of Ruth Pitter. It's available, and it's excellent. There's some really great stuff in there, some really interesting stuff about George Orwell that I had never heard before. So just really, really interesting, intriguing stuff. She had a really interesting life, so I urge you to pick that up if you haven't. But Ruth was actually a well-known poet in her day. She was actually the first female to win the Queen's Gold Medal for poetry in 1955, and the Queen herself insisted that she give it to her personally because she was the first female. So she did several broadcasts on the BBC. She was well known in culture, and she was actually featured on a show called Brain Trust as a radio show. So a lot of interesting things. She worked a pretty typical job. She did some more craftsmanship type things, but her poetry was what she was well known for, and Lewis sort of looked up to her as a mentor for his own poetry. And about the letter that Ruth wrote to Walter Hooper, that was written on 13 January 1969. She says it's a very interesting topic, and that the loss of his mother obviously had a very deep impact on him so young. And she says that there's such a thing as being ill-fated in one respect or another. It is a pity that he made his first impact with Screwtape, in which some women are only too well portrayed in their horrors, rather like Milton's Satan. It is this, perhaps, that has made people think he hated us. But even here, the insight is prodigious. And in the strength of the three romances and the children's books, I would say that he was a great and very perspicacious lover of women, from poor little things right up to the lady in Paralandra. I think he touched innumerable women to the heart here. I know he did me. One could sort of hone in his love and understanding like an aircraft on a beam. So very interesting that she says that he actually impacted her with his portrayal of women. So she even walked away with, I think, a very overall positive experience reading Lewis's females.
Now, Crystal, one of the biographies on Lewis by one of his friends says Lewis actually considered marrying Pitter. What happened there and why didn't he?
Well, George Sayer, who has been, I think, known as one of the great, you know, one of the better biographies of Lewis, was a friend and student of his. He actually said that he went to pick up Lewis at Ruth's house one day, and he made the statement, if I was not a confirmed bachelor, I would marry Ruth. And then Sarah says, well, why don't you? You know, yeah, you know, carpe diem. And Lewis says, oh no, I'm too old for that. I've already burnt my boats. That's his phrase. So I think he had already sort of dismissed himself or had accepted, you know, the fact that he was never going to fall in love. He was going to be a bachelor his whole life. He had sort of, you know, passed that point in his life. So very interesting what he had in store later. but at the time, I believe he just felt like he was too old.
Dorothy L. Sayers is a name that many know, primarily as a great detective novelist. She's also known in some circles for her religious plays and essays and various other writings. But for those less familiar with her, can you give us a summary?
As you mentioned, she's known, I think, primarily as the author of the Lord Peter Wimsey series and Harriet Vane, who is one of my heroes.
Mine too.
It's a fantastic body of work there. And for someone like me who grew up on Nancy Drew, it was a seamless transition into Lord Peter Wimsey. But interestingly, she was actually one of the first women to receive a bachelor's from Oxford in 1920. And as you mentioned, she was a playwright, wrote four religious plays and The Man Born to Be King. And Lewis actually mentions her plays as one of the most sort of influential books to read later in his career. So very well esteemed by Lewis. And she also translated Dante as well.
Now, Crystal, what were some of Lewis's similarities and differences with Sayers?
Well, I think among the similarities, they both had a really great sense of humor, both very inquisitive, and as students, had a sort of a voracious appetite, both of them like to read, both of them enjoyed writing. They were both incredibly intelligent, which I think was a sort of a linchpin of their friendship. And they both, I think, both had this desire to make good art with these undercurrents of sort of, you know, religious appeal. So Lewis, I think, was a little more traditional than her. She actually wrote an essay called Are Women Human, where she discusses women's roles sort of in the newer culture and with the movement sort of being more, a little more independent, being able to not just work inside the home, etc. So I think on some levels they may have had some interesting arguments there. But actually, Gina, you did your graduate thesis on Sayers. So would you like to add some input to that as well?
Sure, thanks. Well, as you said, they were both brilliant readers and writers, but so they had a lot in common, but they also had some differences, and their letters to each other make for some very lively reading sometimes as they would start going at it, and always with great respect for each other, but still some fairly passionate disagreements sometimes. As you say, they were both interested in making good art, but sometimes they differed about what that meant. Lewis very often wrote with an eye on evangelizing the wider culture and trying to bring faith to the masses, if you will, sort of mm-hmm. make it easier for them to understand. And Sayers sometimes thought he went too far. She was very concerned with artistic integrity and mm-hmm. not overdoing it, and not she would have had a lot of issues with some Christians today who think that a work of art is all about the Christian message and it doesn't matter how good the art is. She would have passionately mm-hmm. disagreed with that, because artistic integrity was terribly important to her, and they would get going on that subject sometimes. She never went so far as to say he was a sellout or anything like that, but she warned him against going in that direction, whereas he thought he was doing just fine and didn't really agree with her. But it's fascinating to watch their differences on that point. And that there's one letter where he starts off telling her, whoa, slow down, or something like that, which I think is great fun, because she had gotten a little overheated. But so they had differences like that, that they agreed on a lot of points of doctrine. They were both, I think you would call them both, pretty orthodox, conservative mm-hmm. Theologically. And they were both opposed to, like, female priests, that sort of thing, but sometimes they differed about what the best ways were to accomplish goals in the church. So there were some disagreements there as well. But despite their differences, Lewis seemed to enjoy the correspondence very much, calling her one of the great letter writers of the century. So what do you think drew him to her so much?
I think there's similarities, really. Her wit, she had a boisterous sense of humor, like he did. Incredibly intelligent, like you mentioned, brilliant, brilliant woman. And just reading a few pages of Lord Wimsey, that becomes immediately apparent. And she was, again, she was a woman that, you know, he hadn't really met, you know, someone quite like her. And they were similar, I think, in many ways. And I believe that's sort of what drew them to each other. This sort of, and of course, their faith. They did sort of, you know, share that and again, or how to incorporate that or interpret that into their art. It's it was a very interesting relationship.
We could spend more than a single 20-minute podcast on Joy Davidman herself, but that's not a luxury we have. Crystal, let's first have you tell how Lewis came to meet Joy.
Okay, now Joy was actually, she's American. She was extremely intelligent young woman, and she came actually from New York. Her mother was Jewish. Her father was an atheist. They grew up, you know, in a very poor sort of Depression era New York, and Lyle Dorset in his biography, In God Came In, of Joy Davidman, actually mentions how she was sitting in class and watched a woman commit suicide off of a building because of the lack of food and the poverty and sort of the hopelessness. And I mention that because a lot of that stuff basically climaxed into her decision to join the Communist Party, which she did later. Again, she was incredibly brilliant, graduated early from high school, graduated, you know, with high marks from at Hunter's College, taught high school English for a little bit, and then went back and did her master's at Columbia. And she became a well-known poet. She did a little bit of writing. This is kind of a neat aside. In Hollywood, as a screenwriter, and she eventually met and married Bill Gresham. He kind of ended up, you know, being an alcoholic, womanizer, and basically she started reading Lewis. She read the Screwtape Letters. She read The Great Divorce, and she was very fascinated with Christianity. So one night, Bill did not return home after being out, and she puts the kids to bed, and she said, "I felt so alone, but I felt like there was this other person in the room, a person with a capital P." So it's almost like she felt God's presence there, sort of comforting her. And then the phrase from the biography, she says in an essay about her conversion, "And God came in. You know, I put all my defenses down. God came in." So she converts to Christianity. She befriends Chad Walsh, who was a correspondent of Lewis, and he has them introduces each other so they can start corresponding. And actually, in August of 1952, she sails to England to meet him, to meet Lewis. And they all had a wonderful time. While she was there, she finds out that her husband wants a divorce. And so she's distraught. She comes back. And then she eventually, later that year in November, moves to England permanently with her two sons. So they sort of met as corresponding, but later when she moved over there to England, they actually saw quite a bit of each other. Lewis would stop by her house, and they would chat and play games, and it was a friendship that sort of blossomed into romance later.
Lewis, as the friendship progressed, it's well known that Lewis helped her out financially as she was in some pretty bad financial trouble a lot of the time. And there are those who treat this like it's not such a great thing. Like, was this something unusual for him to help her like this? Is it something that she tricked him into doing? How would you address that?
Most people know that Lewis was a giver. I mean, he talks, even in Mere Christianity, about the importance of being generous. I mean, painfully generous, you know, inconveniently generous, you know, a lot of times. And Lewis did that the same way as well. Owen Barfield, his friend and writer, but also an attorney, set up a fund where a lot of Lewis's money from his books and such went to help others, widows, you know, various, you know, different organizations and such. And so it was not unusual, actually, for Lewis to be giving money to help someone out. Of course, there have been some discussion in the academic community that she was a quote-unquote gold digger, and that she went over there, basically, you know, galloped in and you know, mesmerized him or something. It's a very sort of biased portrait of what Joy actually did. I believe she really did love Lewis, and I mentioned that I've read her love sonnets at the Waite Center, and that there was no, I don't believe, any financial, you know, any sort of ulterior motive for coming over to meet Lewis. She sort of felt like he was a spiritual mentor for her, you know, by reading his books. So she was pretty economically distressed during that time. Bill Gresham was not sending his checks like he's supposed to. And if you've read her letters, she does mention to him, you know, you haven't sent me the check yet, or you didn't send me enough, you know, and she just sort of discusses, you know, the different stuff she's dealing with. But I think in the end, you know, she was also a communist, you know, or at least a former communist, you know, and in America, that was trouble because she had written for a communist newspaper. And so, you know, her resume was kind of spoiled over here in the wake of all that. So I think it was a good move for her to move over there. But obviously they both absolutely loved each other. And if you've read A Grief Observed, you know the depths of Lewis's love for Joy, because it was written in the wake of her death. So I don't think there's any question that they were, mutually attracted to one another and in love with each other.
Now, Gina, you actually wrote an article for Christianity Today that was very good, where you discuss Lewis and Joy. And one of the things that you noted was that their relationship was a relationship of equals. Tell us how you concluded that.
Okay, well, first, thank you for the kind words. I think if you really look at Joy's life and work, it's hard not to conclude that it was a relationship of equals, really. I mean, intellectually, Crystal told us quite a bit about how brilliant she was, a talented scholar, a great writer. I know Crystal and I have talked about, you know, reading her work and how much we've enjoyed it. So, I mean, she was an award-winning writer. She helped Lewis with his work, and he was very grateful for her advice and input. So on an intellectual level, they were certainly equals. On a spiritual level, I think you could even make the case that they were equals. Lewis certainly thought that they were. She was a devout Christian after her conversion, and I'm reminded how Lewis said when she died, she said she was at peace with God. And when you look at her relationship with God, that is sort of the keynote that you see. She was at peace with God all throughout that latter part of her life. She loved God. She often felt his presence, as Crystal mentioned. She describes having felt it. Lewis describes times when she felt it. And she was, you know, truly a person in love with God. And so I think just in every way, they were equals and they enjoyed a marriage of equals.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That was a fantastic article, Gina. And I think I've told you before, I was cheering when I read it. Because I feel like for far too long, Joy's scholarship has been kind of malnourished. And there's, you know, he had such a, like you mentioned, she had such a huge impact on his creative and spiritual life. And, you know, it was a deep, you know, penetrating love. It was a spiritual love. And in A Grief Observed, he talks over and over again about that and about, you know, she wasn't just my wife. She was my mistress. She was everything, you know, and how sort of that love flows from God. And he sort of shares it, you know, in a marriage. And it's such a beautiful example of what marriage is, you know, is. And I can't thank you enough. I do believe it was very equal. I think they respected one another, loved one another, and appreciated the work that each other did. You know, as a matter of fact, Joy's book, Smoke on the Mountain, Lewis wrote the foreword for. He wrote the introduction for. So they were very, very much equals. I agree.
Let me jump in to first encourage everyone to, again, read the 12-part series by Crystal in the show notes. We'll have a link to it. Plus, I'll have a link to Gina's online article from Christianity Today about Joy. Well, as difficult as it can be, Crystal, how would you wrap up the entire series about why those who think Lewis had a poor view on women, that this is really inaccurate?
As we mentioned before, William and I quoted it in a blog, I really think that there is it's sort of a defective way to judge someone when you only read one piece of literature they've written, and then sort of make a sweeping assumption about that person's entire character or their overall, you know, overall generalities, which I quote Lewis in a letter in one of the blogs saying, "Who said I hated women? I never hate generalities." I think, you know, that Lewis is far more complex than that. And I think it's important that people read everything. I know that's a tall task, but before we start throwing around words like misogynistic and sexist, I think that it's important that we not just look at Susan. I mean, we need to look at so many other characters in all of his fictional works, examine the women in his life, and sort of understand how his relationship with women evolved, how his understanding evolved, and how he sort of matured into a new understanding of female. So I think, again, I would encourage people to go back and listen to some of the previous shows, episodes of the podcast. Please feel free to visit my website at crystalhurd.com, crystalhurd.com, and sort of, you know, do a summary. But I highly encourage our audience to read the Space Trilogy, to read Till We Have Faces, and sort of Till We Have Faces, I think, is a magnificent ending, really, to his whole corpus of work, because you have a female narrator who's in power in a leadership position, and we get to see her struggle. And I think Lewis just gets it right. For a man to be writing from a woman's perspective, it's incredibly endearing and, I think, accurate. So I think, to me, that sort of illustrates that Lewis has come around fully, that he can write from a woman's perspective and get it right. So, again, read the books, listen to our podcast, and sort of educate yourself about the variety of things that Lewis wrote, because I think many of the people I've quoted, and some of those people who have said things about Lewis, are very, very famous authors in their own right, but I think they get it wrong. I think to judge by one character is just a fallacy. It's important to read everything so you get the full picture.
All right, and sadly, we not only have to end today's show with that, but the entire mini-series on Lewis and his views on women. I'm William O'Flaherty, the director and producer of these shows. Thank you, the listener, for listening to this fourth and final show on Lewis and women. Hopefully you've had your knowledge of Lewis expanded, especially related to his views on females. Let me thank you, Dr. Hurd, for being a major part in this endeavor. Thank you, Crystal.
Well, thank you so much, William. I appreciate you shedding some light on this topic. Thank you so much.
I also appreciate Gina for co-hosting and sharing some of her knowledge today regarding Lewis and women. Thanks again, Gina.
Thank you. It's been great. It's been such an honor.
Well, once again, I'm William O'Flaherty, thanking you, the listener, for joining us today and reminding you to catch the other three parts, if you haven't already, by checking the archives at EssentialCSLewis.com. Also, stop by EssentialCSLewis.com for interviews that include an occasional series of essay chats that feature a single shorter work by Lewis, which is discussed with an expert or enthusiast of the work of C.S. Lewis. At the time this mini-series is released, not long ago, I had an interview with Paul McCusker about the Screwtape Letters Annotated Edition, and then in late 2013, I spoke with Lewis's stepson, Douglas Gresham. Finally, other features on EssentialCSLewis.com include a daily fact, quote, and quiz, and a year-long series on the life of Lewis, looking at it by the months. EssentialCSLewis.com is a feature partner site on the Middle Earth Network.